Live Line on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry, bringing you great savings on curtains and bedding. Available all year in store and online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Live Line. A century ago, in the last century, Live Line was dealing with complaints about Ticketmaster. Go back, and we haven't gone back beyond 1999, as Prince would say. In 1999, we were contacted by Mir and a lot of other people saying they had paid a booking fee, even though she was paying cash. And the Ticketmaster booking fee represented 20% of the price of the actual ticket. Bill then contacted us and he said, I'm not allowed to charge extra or credit card for credit card bookings in my business. How can Ticketmaster get away with it? I booked the Panto in the Gaiety, and which in those days, remember, we're talking about the last century. We're talking about 1999. They were charged £2. That was the old money. That was just before the euro came in. Was £2. Thought the amount was excessive. Nora, can we jump into this century, the 21st century? 02, the year, not the venue. Nora Jones concert cancelled and she can't get her money back from Ticketmaster. I'm opening an ice rink, said one caller in the IFSC, and I'm so frustrated with Ticketmaster, I'm thinking about running my own ticket agency. You have two chances. Not Ticketmaster, but Live Nation and Ticketmaster now own the entertainment world. And what you saw on Saturday is a reflection on that. Another at 02, Ticketmaster service charge of €2 for an €8 ticket. Okay? We're just picking them out of random here. 05, 19 years ago. Caller saying they're angry about the charges Ticketmaster imposing on customers for the charity comedy gig in Vicar Street. They put on, and it was a charity comedy gig, I don't know what it was the great Paul Tyler, the comedian. And goes on, use a 3V voucher, whatever, couldn't produce, went to collect my tickets that I paid for, couldn't get them. Go on, would I go on to the next page? This will bore you, just as you've all been bored senseless over the weekend with the unending conversation about, oh, aces. Ticketmaster said the name on the ticket when you arrived at the venue wasn't the same as the name on the credit card. And she got on to the consumer, or caller got on to the Consumer Association of Ireland and told there's nothing they could do about it, just as the competition and what's it, they're now the Consumer Association of a new name. And today, and they said there's nothing they can do about what happened, you all, or a lot of people, on Friday. By the way, the tickets, people were paying €130 for tickets in 208. It was Tom Waits gig. And it goes on, Des, I feel I've just been mightily ripped off. This is the 18th of December, 2008. I just bought two tickets for Take That for my wife's Christmas present on needaticket.ie. I think they're gone, really. Need a ticket, God. And I paid €170 per ticket, 208. €10 for delivery in the post. And then the booking charges. The tickets arrived today. I spent a total of €350. Wait for this. The two tickets arrived today. This is in 08. And they have a face value of €79 each. How can this be legal, he says. They're Ticketmaster tickets. This better be a good show. Des says I only work 3 days a week and this is a lot of money to him. Owen Quigg, remember Owen? Anyway, another issue, not to do with Owen, but a booking and Ticketmaster. And then I will keep going on to the look at the pages we have here, and we only went back. Seatwave, where are they gone? I don't see, this is 216. Bernadette, I don't see why touting outside the gig should be illegal and this stuff on websites is legal. I was trying for about an hour, opened up, this sounds so deja vu. Opened up a couple of seats, a couple of lads at work, we were all trying the same thing. Then Ticketmaster directs you to Seatwave. I think Seatwave are gone. where the costs have gone up three times the price of the original tickets. This seems to be a system for tickets now, and people have to pay crazy money. That's 8 years ago. Needaticket.ie. I don't know, is Needaticket still around? Well, we know the Ticketmaster is still around, and we know that Live Nation bought Ticketmaster about 14 years ago. But how did Ticketmaster come to Ireland? Well, they came to Ireland through a very bright entrepreneur in Sligo, still going strong, Tommy Higgins. He's chairman, I think, of Sligo Rovers at the moment for his sins, but he's a well-known soccer referee. But this is Tommy Higgins talking to, because it's important to find out how all this started. Because it started, all the politicians, you know, there's an election, didn't you? The politicians over the weekend saying something has to be done, MEPs saying it's outrageous. You got the opportunity to do something 20 years ago and you did nothing. This is Tommy explaining how Ticketmaster and how this whole idea came, mainly started by him in Ireland and Britain.
The first person to bring a computerised system into Ireland was The Point. Okay. And it was Harry did a deal with the Apollo Leisure in the UK that hooked a line up to us in HMV in Grafton Street. You know, there's always a tipping point in a business. And I remember one day going out and there's a queue of people all up Grafton Street around to Chatham Street. And they were queuing up for the show called Cats. The computer had broken down and slowed down. I remember going out to the queue. You were appeasing them and telling them, look, it'll be up and around. And what I could hear was all the different accents. Where people had come from Carlow and Dundalk and everything. And I said, look, if all these people were prepared to come 50 to 100 miles, come up and buy tickets, we could get the tickets to them. There's a market out there that hasn't been tapped. So we went away and got our own computer system. And I put it into 24 shops around the country. I was aware of Ticketmaster. Yeah. They had opened up in the States. But I didn't realise I was doing the same thing that he was doing, but on a much smaller scale. The fact that new artists, big artists, could come now to The Point because you had the capacity. What happened then, Ticketmaster had an operation in London and they came looking around Dublin. And I said, this is dangerous, because we would never have been able to compete with them because they had all the money and resources in the world. You know, they were flying out in the United States at that time. And I got hold of them and invited them down for a cup of coffee and had a word with them. And said, I said, look, I have all the promoters tied up, which was kind of half alive. And look, I said, we might do a joint venture. We said, well, we don't have the authority to do that, but I get you a meeting in Los Angeles. So I went out to Los Angeles and had a chat with them. And I always remember on the 14th floor, and look, and there was the Hollywood sign in the distance, come back, and I was by myself, and there was a pile of executives, and we were sort of looking at one another. And the meeting wasn't going great, and the guy popped his head around the corner. And he said, I was introduced to him from Ireland. And he says, by the way, he says, I have an Irish passport, but I've never been to Ireland. And the whole room lit up. And then I think it was the chief operating officer just said, look, he says, maybe go over and have a look at Ireland, see what it's like, and get your passport stamped. That night we went out to dinner. We had, after a couple of hours, we had a deal done.
And then Tommy brought him the Ticketmaster crew from LA to Dublin. He got the Irish agency for Ticketmaster and he got the UK agency for Ticketmaster. Good luck to him. And then I presume, I'm not up to speed, I know Tommy wrote an autobiography where he had a good bang off Liveline and myself for doing it, for doing all these complaints, but that's life. That's life. That's Live Nation now. And Tommy, I presume, sold his interest in Ireland and Britain when Ticketmaster went global with Live Nation. Live Nation, who own everything, they own bands, they own tours, they own venues, they have an interest. Live Nation have controlling interests in 338 venues globally and believes itself, they call themselves, the largest live entertainment company in the world, the largest producer of live music concerts in the world's leading live entertainment ticketing sales and marketing company, that's what they call themselves, and we are one of the world's biggest artist management companies, and we are one of the world's music advertising networks for corporate brands. And in May 2024, the Justice Department in the USA and a coalition of states sued to break up Live Nation over antitrust violations. Well, that's ongoing. Now, Ron O'Sullivan's there, Paul Martin's there, Niall Heenan is there, Carol Kelly is there, Mickey Murphy is there, Paddy Jones is there, Lee McGuire is there. They're all lined up. Everyone isn't going to get on because in many cases you're saying the same thing. Ronan.
Hello, Joe.
Can you say anything different than what you heard over the weekend? You went in, you queued, you thought you were going to get a ticket for 87, you ended up paying how much, or did you?
Well, we didn't pay anything in the end.
We
never made it to the front of the queue.
And would you have paid anything?
We would have had a figure in mind. But having spoken to friends and seen what they, you know, what they were getting tickets offered at, it wasn't anywhere close to what I would have thought. What was initially advertised at €86 per ticket, you know, ended up at. It was hundreds, four and 500. Yeah.
So what, Stoke, give me a question. I can't answer any of these. I'm just nodding my head like the dog in the back window of a car at this stage. I go back to the last century and say people were complaining then. The only group that could do anything about it were politicians, and they did nothing. Now they're all doing backflips all over the weekend saying it's a disgrace, a rip-off ticket, blah-de-blah-de-blah, but they won't do anything about it. Ronan, can anything happen? It's capitalism, isn't it?
In a way, it's capitalism, but I also think there's an onus on the venue owners to give back a bit more. Croke Park would have a say in who comes in and holds concerts in their venues. They invite in Ticketmaster, who brings in their promoters. I think it's like MCD. But
Ronan. Don't blame the GAA on this one, please. That's unfair.
I said venues, Joe.
The venue.
Also, there's the Aviva, there's the Point, O2, many venues holding thousands and thousands of people who offer a great service, but who allow a monopoly to.
But they've no choice.
I believe as the owners, they have a choice in
so we don't
who uses and what is shown in their venues.
So they see,
in
so
a way, I'm not,
you're, so you're
I'm
saying,
not saying
you're
the only ones.
But hang on, are you saying Croke Park should have said no to Oasis?
Absolutely not. No, but I do think they should have had some sort of oversight or expressed an interest in how the tickets were to be sold.
Yeah, but hang on, how much they were going to be sold for. One thing that's been displayed, I think, how brilliant Croke Park is as a venue. When the gang of them got together, whoever, Liam Mulvihill and Chris Gogarty and D Power, and I think the architect is Des Matches, please, someone correct me. When they designed Croke Park all those years ago, when there was a big campaign to get Croke Park out of the centre of Dublin, they went in, they designed, it's a state, in terms of sound, it's one of the best in the world. In terms of ingress and egress, entry and exit, it's one of the best in the world, as everyone attested over the weekend. So don't blame Croke Park.
Absolutely. No, I'm not blaming Croke Park. I completely agree with what you're saying. But what's at fault here is the methodology by which Ticketmaster sells their tickets, the algorithm they run through, the way they assess prior to events what sort of interest there is in events, what market they have, how many people. And then they're able to dynamically price these tickets very fast as people come on and start to purchase the tickets.
Yeah.
So I'm not blaming the venues, but when you get outrage like this, the venues have an ability to take on the sentiment of the public that they're not happy, and they have some say or the ability to say, you know what, we're not happy with this, and we would like to see a more equitable distribution of tickets in our venues,
okay.
And that goes for all large venue managers.
Okay.
But it's great to see that Regina Doherty and Micheál Martin have come out.
That'll frighten the life out of Live Nation. I say they're rattling. I say the Competition Authority have already said there are no CCPC, Micheál agus Regina. There are no price controls in Ireland apart from in certain, this is from the CC, certain limited areas. Individual businesses can decide on the price of the products they sell, and they are allowed to adjust their prices in response to demand or other factors. Once an accurate price is displayed to the consumer in advance of the sale, I know someone will contest that, they can decide if they want to proceed.
Well, there you go, Joe. Once an accurate price is displayed in advance of.
Yeah.
Tickets start at €83. How many people saw an €83 ticket? in advance of, if you and I go to the Gaiety Theatre.
Yeah, but they mean is on the screen. You were offered a ticket. I don't know what you were for a finish. Say 350 or 520 or whatever. Yeah, you were offered. You were offered that price. If you had bought, if you had gone for that price, that's what you would have paid. That's their point, isn't it?
If I wanted to pay that, I could.
Yeah, I know. I know.
But there's probably another factor at play, Joe. There was an awful lot of market data gathered by the ticket sellers in advance of this. They had pre-sale.
Yeah.
And they were seeing how much word of mouth this thing spread on WhatsApp, and then. As soon as the two nights were sold out, they're after landing in and saying, "Oh, I think we'll do another two." Now, what effect would that have had on ticket sales? Had there was going to be four nights of Oasis? They're now talking about an additional two.
Already, where well, so I didn't, they, I thought they'd announce them immediately, and they didn't.
They're talking about another two. I don't know if they're going to go ahead.
Who's they?
But what they've done is they Oasis. And the promoters and Ticketmaster. There's talk of another two nights of Oasis in Dublin. Now, what that does as well is it creates a demand. Oh, there's only two nights. We've got to get in here. I'm 100,000 in the queue. I'm going to pay 500 because I've waited this long all morning.
Okay.
This is the best ticket I can get. And as soon as they're sold out, then there's a potential to offer another two nights of the show.
Yeah, but I haven't heard anything from, I think, who's promoting at MCD to say that there's a possibility of two more. Okay, Ronan. How much had you a limit in your head for the tickets?
We were kind of thinking about 250, you know, 250.
Okay.
But look, we didn't even get that far.
Okay.
Anyone I spoke to, they were talking about 400 and 500.
Yeah, I know. Okay, good. I mean, I got to run on. Carol Kelly, quickly, what happened? You set the alarm like everyone else did. You got up early, you put on the thingamajig, and you had four laptops going. You were like on the Apollo 11. You had so many screens in front of you. How much were you offered eventually a ticket for, Carol?
415 plus fees. So I'm guessing around 450.
Wow. And
each.
Yeah, for what? For standing on the pitch?
Oh, for the in-demand standing ticket.
In-demand?
Yeah. Basically the same as the person earlier on that paid 177.
Yeah, so what did you do when you saw 415?
Oh, well, I didn't buy it,
okay.
Of course. Yeah.
Did you course at the screen? Were you angry?
I suppose, you know, all the time they're spent and waiting, and then Ticketmaster is a nightmare most times to go onto it, and then when you finally get in, tickets available, and you go, great, and then you see that it's going to cost this amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
So just all of the time wasted and all that. So this excuse in demand, I mean, they reformed after 15 years. What do they think? There was going to be no demand. There was always going to be demand.
Yeah, okay.
A
text from somebody. I was in Paris on Saturday morning. I logged on to Ticketmaster 15 minutes beforehand and was placed, this is for the concert in Dublin, and was placed approximately 10,000 in the queue. I was also on another screen to pals in Dublin who had logged on, obviously, Ticketmaster.ie, and they were 100,000 plus in the queue. I got a ticket within minutes, and my buddies didn't. How many queues were going at the one time? So you're okay, in demand standing. Okay, Carol, how much were you prepared to pay?
Probably about 150. I'm going to see Paul McCartney in Paris for €100.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you compare the two... I sort of said Oasis 150, but just on this pricing, Ed Sheeran is doing a world tour, okay? So in Europe, you can actually go and buy tickets for his gig for €30. Because what he said was, he said, I don't mean to sound crass, but what do I need all this money for? He just wants to play the gigs to the fans. And when he was younger, he wants to go to gigs and to be able to afford it.
Okay.
So he gets tickets starting at €30 and a top level of 140, okay? So it is up to the band to have a say in how much they're going to charge.
Noel Rock, the former Fine Gael TD, had a bill drafted to outlaw scalping and secondary selling. Now, he did work on touting, didn't he? Illegal touting out. That bill apparently gathers dust in Merrion Street. Belgium has already banned tickets being sold above face value. Ticket Monster. That's what this person called it. Where's Paul Martin? Paul.
Hey, Joe. How are things?
What's your tale of woe?
Well, where do you start, Joe? I suppose it was a case of the waiting room initially. I mean, a few of us logged on kind of in and around about the same time.
Yeah.
And say about 7:15, we all got into the waiting room.
Yeah.
People who logged on after us at 8 o'clock seemed to go into the queue an awful lot higher than what we did.
Okay.
I mean, I was 173,000.
Yeah.
My wife logged on, she was 55,000, even though she logged on 40 minutes after me.
And how did... go straight to the finish. What happened? Did you get anything?
Well, luckily enough, a friend of mine got tickets for us on the pre-sale the night before. Two tickets only. €177, Joe, the ticket. But that's not really the issue with anyone, Joe. I mean, I heard you talk there about Crow Park and, you know, different things. The main issue here is the lack of clarity on the prices. I mean, we all know, I never heard of dynamic pricing until Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
On a different news outlet today, it was reported that the ball, stops with Oasis and their promotional team. It's those guys who apparently say what goes on and what way the tickets are priced. So Ticketmaster, as far as I'm aware, have now passed
I heard that.
So, again, and it's, again, Joe, the kind of the snakiness, I suppose, of the ticket prices. I mean, to start off at, to rebrand them, I suppose. You know, you had tickets, standing tickets was a standing ticket. Then they got increased in price. They went to premium tickets. QZAC stand tickets were just QZAC stand tickets, went to platinum tickets for, over the price of what they were on sale for.
Yeah.
So I don't think anyone has the issue with the fact that, these tickets were going to be in demand and, there was going to be, high volume of people actually looking for them. No one has an issue with that. I think the issue here is with Ticketmaster and rebranding the tickets.
Ticketmaster is saying, this, I heard Claire reading out the statement, I heard Anton reading out the statement and the same statement on News Talk. They're saying, Ticketmaster saying nothing to do with us, the promoter.
Yeah.
And the band decide, are you in or out for dynamic pricing? And if they say yes, Live Nation, who own they own the world of teams. If they say yes, well, then that's it. Now, Paul, do you think next August there's going to be anyone in Crow Park, at the Hogan Stand, the Cusick Stand, the Hill, he won't be on the Hill, whatever, or on the pitch? Do you think there's anyone going to hold up a poster to Liam and Nullick and say you're two rip-off merchants? The answer is?
Not a chance. No.
Okay. Where's Donald gone? Donald, come into me, Donald. Where are you? Come into the waiting room, Donald. Where's Donald gone? just when I needed you most. Okay, Donald says, David.
Hey, Joe.
Listen, go on, talk freely.
Oh, Joe. I didn't look for tickets. I had no interest in looking for tickets. But as I said to your researcher, I price things for a living. And it's very simple. If people are prepared to pay the price, so be it. And if you don't like the price, don't buy the tickets. Now, I hear what people are saying about their places in the queue and all that stuff. That seems very difficult. It doesn't sound right. But, I mean, if you're in the commercial world and you're doing an e-auction or doing a tender for business or something like that, basically, if you put your price in, if the customer doesn't like your price, they're not going to buy it.
Yeah. True for you, Dahi. Let me go, Kevin. Kevin.
Yes, hello, Joe.
You're listening. Give me an in-depth analysis, please.
Well, it won't be in-depth analysis, but, I mean, as you introduced the show there, you said this has been going on for a century. I actually don't know why people are giving out. I mean, I was in a pub the other day with a friend of mine, and he said that he was prepared to go to 500 because he knows what they do. And I equated it to Ryanair, and there's nothing against Ryanair, but when they sell their Euro tickets.
They sell
10 tickets for their plane, and then they up the price to fill the plane. Ticketmaster do this exactly the same. The €83 is just introductory. And people know for the last century that it's going to be dearer than that. So I don't know why people are complaining. And the place is going to be full to capacity for the four concerts, if that's what it is.
Yeah, yeah.
And all those people will be delighted.
And apparently anyone who's been to the Coldplay concerts that began on Thursday night, everyone I've been speaking to said to me, without exception, it was the, even if some people weren't mad Coldplay fans, they said it was the experience of a lifetime. Just to be in a crowd where everyone was so happy, where Croke Park were so well organised, where every seat and every standing spot in Croke Park, thanks to, I mentioned them earlier, and Gilroy McMahon, are the architects and the crew that put the quartet of people who put Croke Park together, who were the driving force. It was a brilliant venue, and it was so happy and so joyous and so well organised that it was worth whatever they paid for it. So that's life.
Yes, and I suspect Oasis will be worth every single penny that that the concert goers go to and enjoy. But I just, you know, when people get on the radio, it's a little bit infuriating because you read it out
since last
century. No, maybe, but I mean, people have to read. People are sensible. They know the price is going to go up. Now, this is either buy the ticket and go, but don't get on to Joe and complain about it after the event, because I don't know who's going to change Ticketmaster. It certainly won't be Micheál Martin or Regina or the Taoiseach or anybody
or
else.
Joe Duffy or anyone. Or Liveline, We've been at it for 30 years.
just go enjoy the concert, pay the price, and bite the bullet. I'm sorry, that's all the advice I can give.
Ronan, do you want to reply to that? Is it a bit hard?
Well, no, but what I do take a bit of exception in with is saying that it's not Micheál Martin or Regina Doherty or our elected politicians that are not capable of fixing this. These are the people we've elected to represent us, to come in on our behalf.
That's true.
Outrage like this amongst the public. And this isn't the first time this has happened.
Good point.
There's other concerts like Taylor Swift and Sabrina Carpenter that also involve dynamic pricing and predominantly aimed at very young people, like children. And there's an awful lot of children that would love to have gone to see Taylor Swift. And they might come from disadvantaged or impoverished backgrounds, and they absolutely cannot get any opportunity to go and see this person. So
and
Ronan, just
to ballast your point, as I said there, a caller said in Belgium, the government have introduced legislation saying tickets cannot be sold above the face value of the ticket as it's originally advertised. In other words, you have tickets for 100, 200, 300, 400.
And that's great legislation, Joe. But also, I mean, it's Ticketmaster themselves that allow you to go on and sell a ticket on their website for 3 or 4 or 5 times the face value. So they're saying, don't use ticket touts, but do come onto our website so we can recuperate the selling fee again. So Taylor Swift tickets going for 3 and 4 times what they were bought for through Ticketmaster themselves.
But that's
it goes two ways. I mean, Green Day and Pearl Jam didn't sell out and their tickets fell in value, but it is price gouging. And I agree with Micheál Martin when he says that. It is price gouging, and it's up to our elected politicians to follow Belgium and put in legislation that protects consumers and gives everyone a fair and equitable opportunity to avail of big events in our country.
Okay, Ronan, points well made. Donald Kelly in Port Leisure. Donald.
Hey Joe, how are you?
Good.
Listen, I was just listening to it, and I was listening to it all weekend, particularly on social media, and how, you know, everybody's blaming Ticketmaster, but and there's kind of like a notion that Oasis care about their fans. Like Liam and Noel Gallagher didn't care about each other until last week, and ultimately this has come. ultimately, this didn't come down to anything other than money. And the Guardian newspaper has reported that between the two of them, their fee for this rebranding of Oasis is 100 million euro, or sorry, 100 million pounds sterling. So there's 14 shows being played over the course of this particular portion of the tour. Mm-hmm. So for 100 million, that means we'll assume there's 80,000 people a night at each show of those 14 shows. That means they'll have to get 89 pounds sterling. They have to take £89 sterling out of the ticket, each individual ticket sale, to cover the two buys, 100 million, over those 14 nights. And it was never going to be anything other than this, the way it's turned out, particularly with this dynamic pricing thing. And by the way, the market only bears what the market will pay. Mm. And I don't understand where people are whinging and moaning about the price of it. If you don't want it, don't buy it. Walk away. It's very, very simple.
Yeah, but there is. And that's, by the way, I think, I don't know who made the Ryanair analogy a few minutes ago. I think they're wrong. When you go onto the, in fairness to Ryanair, when you go onto the Ryanair website, you see a ticket. You see the price of a ticket. And, you pay for your bags and that. But the price of the ticket is the same at the beginning of the transaction as it is at the end of the transaction. So Ryanair, now I know what people say, if I have to go to a funeral tomorrow in London and I try and get a flight tonight, of course it's going to be dearer. Of course it's going to, but that's different. I know you didn't bring in Ryanair. I'm just trying to defend Ryanair because I don't think they go in for that level of gouging. They don't, by any stretch of the imagination. And they've been an incredible addition to this country
As soon as people stop paying this type of money, this nonsense stops. It's as simple as that. It very much is.
Okay.
And, I saw them in 1997. And they were brutal then. And I can't imagine they've got any better by not doing what they do normally.
Okay. And what about all this guff we were listening to last week about Peggy? And Peggy's a lovely woman. I've seen her being interviewed. Peggy Gallagher being from Knock or Charlestown, and everyone loves them. And when the two boys come home, the procession falls behind them going through Charlestown, and they throw money at the children, the footless children or whatever, and the poor children. But anyway, just for people, I think a lot of people today...
It's just a wonderful marketing campaign, Joe,
exactly.
Right?
That's the business. There is 3 o'clock mass on the Basilica today in Knock, and you probably have as much chance if you get down on your hands and knees, and you can see it's online as well. It's a great website. If you get down on your hands and knees at 3 o'clock, you have as much chance of making a difference to the two boys giving you your money back or saying we object to the prices and everyone's getting 100. Anyone who spends X amount is getting 50% back. You have two chances. Off to the Basilica with everybody. Gail Hanbridge. Gail, thanks, Donald.
Hi.
Yeah. What's your tale of woe?
I was only 30,000 in the queue. So that was actually really... But, you know, I did the simple maths and I was like, I'm not going to get tickets, if you know what I mean. So I proceeded to queue. I got to the top of the queue within an hour and a half. And there was only the 415 euro tickets, and I was like, "Oh, it says standing 415." So I clicked into the little icon and said, "There is no VIP, element to this, so it was purely standing." So I did what those gentlemen said. I just didn't give Ticketmaster or Oasis my money, and logged off.
Okay.
But later on in the day, I logged back in. And every single ticket, no matter how much they were, so people were prepared. So in a way, Oasis were right. They were able to get as much money as possible out of the Irish. And the people who were not wealthy enough to buy the tickets just didn't get them.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's...
So it would have been nice because my son, he would have liked to go, and my cousin and her young one, so there's going to be multi-generational, Oasis fans. But unfortunately, wouldn't be prepared to pay 415 for them, So I did and didn't. I didn't buy any. You know what I mean? But other people are prepared to buy them.
That's fair enough. But it is. I think it is fundamentally unfair, and it's fundamentally.
Oh, it is fundamentally. What I would like to know: you have hundreds of thousands of people listening to you there. Somebody must have got. I want to know, did anybody get the standard tickets?
I heard Claire this morning. Yeah, they did. Claire this morning mentioned that she had a caller saying, I got my 89 quid ticket.
Yeah. I wonder what number they were in the queue.
Okay, Keane, much did you pay? Keane, Kelly, Raheny, Dublin. Joe. Much did you pay, old pal? Much did you pay?
Well, I paid 440 euro, all in all. So I did buy the 415 euro ticket. I'm delighted that I did get a ticket, to be honest with you.
And hang on. Was that a standing ticket?
That was the normal standing ticket. Now, a friend of mine a standing ticket.
For 87?
No, he got it for 177 euro. So I paid double what he paid. So he got two tickets for the same price I paid for one. But listen, I'm just delighted that I got a ticket anyway. I'm just one of the lucky ones,
something? Do you know what number your pal was in the queue?
Well, he was pre-sale, so I'm not too sure what number he was.
Completely different kettle of fish. People from pre-sale got... What I wanted to know, did anybody who logged on between 7:30, 8:00, whatever, on the day, not pre-sale, get tickets at the advertised price. That's what I'd like to know. And if you do, please ring Joe and tell him.
Gail, what difference would it make in the whole wide earthly world?
No, but I just...
The four people, it makes no difference.
It may make no difference. But what they're doing is they're advertising them. People like me weren't willing to pay the price they were looking for. But I'd love to know, just out of curiosity, did anybody on the Saturday morning get them for the same price as people paid for in the pre-sale?
What's the pre-sale?
Gail, how do I get into the pre-sale?
I'll tell you how to get into pre-sale.
How?
You got on... they had links on social media. You literally went in, name, date of birth, how many... Oasis concert you've been to, and a question about a founding member of Oasis. And then if you were in there, it was basically a draw, a lottery, and then you got an email link to buy them on the Friday evening, I think between 7 and 10.
Okay.
So I didn't get pre-sale.
I signed up for pre-sale as well. I didn't get it. But I'm just happy... I'm not happy that I paid €440, but I'm just delighted I did get a ticket. Like, for that price, you're expecting a headbutt off Liam for that price, you know what I mean? Like, but, but I'm delighted that I did get a ticket. To be honest with you, I am a big fan. I've been a fan since I was a teenager. They broke up when I was 14, so I would have never have gotten a chance
for resale, I probably
would have paid double of that. Yeah.
I'm delighted you're prepared. But if people are prepared to spend that much money, which is their right, you know, the tickets will continue to go up and up and up and up. And there should be more...
but as other people said, Gail, other countries have brought in legislation to try and deal with this. You know, fair is fair.
When did the Irish government stop us being ripped off about anything? Never. You know what I mean? They're not going to... I thought that had come through about the ticket touting, but somebody's saying it never came through. Because you can go on the Ticketmaster or whatever platform and sell your tickets for multiples of the price you pay for them on Ticketmaster. You know what I mean? So it's a big cartel.
To be fair, I probably would have paid if I didn't get a ticket. I probably would have been willing to pay probably €800-900 for resale.
That's why they're getting away with it, you know, that people are actually willing to pay. Come here, Joe, and everybody, I have to go. I have things to do, I'm afraid.
Yeah, okay. Me too, Gail. Good luck.
Yes, you're right.
Oasis in the Tivoli in 1994. The tickets were £6.75. Now even the Oasis is gone at this stage. But what was the amount? Maybe you can help me, Keane. What was the amount that we spent on a bicycle shed in Dalairn for 16 bikes? €350,000.
And sure, how much was that printer as well?
Exactly, that they had to knock down the wall. Anyway, where is it? We do. Oh, by the way, sorry, people want good value. People want good value. Next Sunday, for example, I logged on to the National Concert Hall website there while I was waiting for the programme to start to see what was on around Ireland for good value. Next Sunday, Red Hurley, the wonderful Red Hurley, the legendary Red Hurley, and guests with Claudia Boyle, who you know from Funny Friday with us, brilliant soprano, Francesco Nicolosi on violin. That's on, you there, Keane? That's next Sunday in the National Concert Hall, a beautiful venue. You know how much the tickets start at, Keane? Have a guess.
I'd say probably €16.
No, 12. You give concession, £22.50. Tickets start at £25. Come on.
If only could get that now on Saturday, it would have been too bad.
Now, Keane, don't use the word headbutt. I know you did, but don't. And I'll tell you why. I was watching, I don't know whether you saw it, there's a video going around at the weekend from four fellas fighting on the main street in Navan. I think it was Saturday night or Friday night. And the fight went on and they were baiting the living daylights out of each other. And they were headbutting. It was disgusting. They were headbutting each other. They were kicking each other in the head when one of them was on the ground. And there wasn't a sign of a passerby were filming this, No sign of anyone intervening or no sign of a Garda arriving. And the headbutt was a savage, savage blow. But I know you didn't mean it in that circumstance.
No, of course you didn't.
Keane, just gave me an opportunity to mention that. Did anyone witness or what happened after the fight in Navan on, over the weekend? Or is it a regular occurrence? Joe at RTE.ie, 51551.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And I mentioned Knock and the Shrine of the Basilica. Well, the place of enormous reverence and enormous relevance and enormous visitation by people in Ireland going back 100 years. The first charter flight from Ireland to Lourdes, from Dublin to Lourdes, was in 1947, would you believe? When people in their droves start going to Lourdes. Lourdes has, second to Paris, Lourdes has the biggest number of hotels in France, so that's as that gives you an idea. There's something like 150 million people have visited. The apparition was in 1858, St. Bernadette, a young Bernadette, 14 years of age. There was 18 apparitions over a period. She died at the age of 35, Bernadette did, and was proclaimed blessed in 1925, and then a saint in 1933. Her feast day is celebrated on the 16th of April and on the 18th of February in France. Her Bernadette's body was exhumed on the 18th of April 1925 for a beatification, and it was found to be uncorrupted. It was then decided to place it in the chapel of the Sisters of Nevers, where it is still visible today. Now, for people who have a great devotion to St. Bernadette, and by the way, there are something like 5,000 cures attributed to St. Bernadette of Lourdes. Well, people who have a special devotion to St. Bernadette and who, for whatever reason, could be finance, could be time, could be age, infirmity or whatever, can't go to Lourdes. Well, a relic of St. Bernadette, as we discovered when we were talking about Galway Cathedral a few weeks ago, now there's more details are being released today. The relic of St. Bernadette will arrive in Knock, again, in on the 4th of September. And one of the people bringing the relic to Ireland, and the relic will go through every diocese in Ireland, would normally go to one venue in every diocese. For example, in Wexford, it's in St. Aidan's in Enniscorthy. And in Dublin, it's in Our Lady of Victories in Ballymun Road. It's a big church. They need a big church. It will be in Knock Shrine. It'll be in Tuam, the Cathedral of the Immaculate Conception in Sligo. And one of the people bringing the relic is Gerard Bennett. Gerard, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. Thanks for having me on today.
Great. Tell us about it.
Well, I mean, it's been quite a while coming in many ways, because it was planned that we would bring the relics to Ireland before COVID. And in fact, in the first full year of COVID, they were meant to be here. But of course, COVID took everything else out. And it meant we had to, wait, obviously, until Lourdes began again in a full way, and then go through the process of kind of getting into the schedule, because Ireland's not the only country that has wanted to have the relics, and indeed other countries have had them before us already. So yeah, it's been in some ways it's been a long time coming, and I think that all of us who are in any way involved with Lourdes are hugely excited to see them finally coming to Ireland. It'll be a really once in a lifetime opportunity.
And is this the first time a relic of St. Bernadette?
Yes, I mean, certainly it's the first time in, I mean, I couldn't say has there been any small relic of her clothing or whatever else that's any stage brought back by an individual. But yes, this is the first time the relics as such in this way have ever come to Ireland. And it's an incredibly special event. In fact, up until, it was only back in 2017 that the Lourdes authorities thought of the idea of perhaps making this possible, because there are many people across Ireland, you know, in this case, who maybe cannot go to Lourdes. And it's a way, in fact, of, you know, replicating that pilgrimage experience, but in your own parish, in your own diocese, etc. And in that way, it's incredibly special. To be able to do that.
And who do you apply to? What, by the way, what is the relic? It's not clothing, obviously. It's part of her uncorrupt remains, is it?
Correct. So it's a small piece of bone, as you understand it. So the relics, in fact, are actually all or have always been in the care of the city of the Sisters of Nevers, which is in Nevers in France, which is where St. Bernadette lies today. And in fact, she left Lourdes in 1867 and she never returned after that. St. Bernadette was always very, very clear that Lourdes was not about Bernadette. Lourdes was about Our Lady. So she left in 1867 to go to live with her sisters and be a sister of Nevers, which is where she lies today. So when the beatification and canonization process was taking place then, it was entirely with that local diocese and the sisters.
Okay.
And it was the sisters who gave the fragment of bone that is in this reliquary that it will be brought to Ireland by the Diocese of Elphin and then would go around Ireland.
And is there just one reliquary on... travelling round?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Well, then, and tell us the process. Who do you apply to the nuns in Nevers, do you?
No. So what happened is that in Ireland, there is an association of all of the directors of the pilgrimages called United Irish Pilgrimages. And there's one of the bishops on the Bishops' Conference, Bishop Kevin Doran, is the liaison between the UIP. So basically, the Bishops' Conference of Ireland applied to the bishop in Lourdes. And made a request for this to be possible. And then it would be the bishop locally in Lourdes who gave permission for the reliquary to go to Ireland. And there's a whole process. I mean, obviously, this is incredibly special. You know, it's by no means a trivial thing in any way. So they're very clear on how it should take place and what must happen. You know, even down to, you know, that the you know, the security on the relics, etc. So it's very, very carefully planned. There are many liturgies that they help us with in terms of providing them. So it goes from the Bishops' Conference here to the Bishop of Lourdes, and he then will give permission, and hence they arrive here on Thursday.
Okay. And when it's arriving? Oh, it's arriving 3 days hence. Yes.
Yeah.
We're into September. Sorry, my mistake.
Absolutely.
I presume it's in a special ornate container, is it?
It is, yeah. So the reliquary, it's actually, I mean, it's specially made for this.
Yeah.
And there's a, you know, even the way it has been decorated and developed, you know, things like, for example, the stained glass window of the basilica are reflected in it. And the colours of the enamel on the pillars are to represent that international aspect of, you know, Lourdes. Because, you know, it's often said that whilst Lourdes is in France, which of course it is, but in every way it's an incredible international shrine, because whereas 20 years ago or 25 years ago, you know, it was primarily Europeans that you would see in Lourdes, and certainly always a lot of Irish. Nowadays, with travel being different, you know, there's a lot of Asian countries and the US, etc. So it's very different. But no, it's a very specially decorated, you know, glass, and they can see the the relic, and it would be brought then to each of the locations.
And how does I remember, you do remember, of course, because it was a major event when the relics of Saint Therese of the Flowers came to Ireland. That was in a special vehicle.
It's very similar. So in fact, UIP have been there's been a company in Northern Ireland has donated a van for the 2 months, and that's been also an insurance company has come in behind it to also sponsor the insurance. So the van is being given, and so what will happen in fact is the relics will go to, let us say, a diocese, and then somebody from the receiving diocese will then send a driver and somebody to accompany them, and they will then bring them. So from diocese to diocese, or there's two congregations also. There's the diocese, 26 of them, but then there's the Abbots of Mary Immaculate, not too far from your own place in Inchicore, and then the Franciscans down, of course, on Merchant's Quay. So they're the other two major pilgrimages that go to Lourdes as well as the diocese. So each of them will have it, and they will then bring that around. The van will travel right through until the early part of November, at which point then they will then return to Lourdes.
And when, you know? Because I visited the the relics of St. Therese. I actually had a broken leg at the time. That's why I went around. It was in bits. I was in a terrible, fed up state. And they were in a local church. And I got great support from the reverence of the people in St. Gabriel's and Dollymount. But anyway, that's not here nor there. But am I allowed to go up with my beads? Can my beads touch the glass of where the relic? In other words, what is the protocol and the processes on the day when it visits a local church?
Sure. So there's basically, I mean, in some ways, it has been developed as a pilgrimage, if you like, in each of these places. And there are three elements to it. So one thing that, everybody who's heard of Lourdes will know about the baths, as they always were referred to. Now, you know, that's COVID, of course, changed the format of that. But that's been part and parcel of the Lourdes since the apparitions. And so there's a water gesture that will take place because pilgrimages are bringing the water back from Lourdes for this.
Okay.
So people can have avail of the water gesture, which is exactly echoes what takes place at the baths in Lourdes. As you said, people can visit the relics and people will have rosary beads or just to touch the casket, etc. Of course, people want to see it and et cetera and to venerate it. And, you know, it's very much around that is the veneration of the relics. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, places will be having processions in Lourdes. We'll all have heard of the torchlight procession at nighttime. So that will take place in almost every venue and Blessed Sacrament procession. So it's almost like the usual pilgrimage is, let's say, 5 days. And over the 2 days, you will see many of those same things that take place in Lourdes taking place in your home parish or your home cathedral, wherever that might be. And, you know, it's funny.
Come back to me, Jarrett. You're gone on the... Okay, come back. Ruth, come in while I... Actually, it's 2:37. Let me take a break. Ruth, please. And we'll get Jarrett back. joe@rt.ie.
Thank you.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Ruth, good afternoon. You have been to Nevers.
I was, Joe. It's a long, long time ago now.
Okay.
College, UCC, we went with the group. And I have to say, without any pre-thoughts or anything, when I saw her in her little coffin, she was only about 4 foot, I found it extraordinarily moving. And I hadn't expected that. I'm not one of these people who, you know, has devotion or that kind of thing. I've never been a follower of Padre Pio or anything like that. But I just... There was something about her, and when I subsequently read about her, she was very badly bullied. You know, she was bullied by the bishop because of her apparition. She was bullied in the convent. She had a rough old time, poor old Bernadette. But there was something about her in that coffin that has lingered in my brain since, and it was a special moment. So I would just say to anybody, you know, whether you're an agnostic, an atheist, or a pious Catholic, Lourdes is worth visiting. There's something very moving about it as a place, you know, once you get away from all the plastic Madonna, you know, water bottles and all the rest of it, you know, the Virgin Mary water bottles, you know, there's a lot of commerce in that. But when you get down to the actual shrine, there's something very moving about it. And so, you know, and I know there are people who've been there who have been atheists who came away saying, yes, it was something special. Mm-hmm. You know, because we're living in a world now, obviously, where we have a lot of problems with the institution of the church, but we mustn't forget that there were individuals who, you know, who believe firmly in something higher than ourselves. And I think it's good sometimes to be reminded of that. And if that doesn't sound pious in itself, but Lourdes is special. And of course, its setting is gorgeous because it's underneath the Pyrenees. And oh gosh, it's a beautiful setting.
Do you think, just one question, Jared? Is it 20 years since Saint Therese, the relics of Saint Therese, were in Ireland? Is it 20 or 15?
About that, because in fact, I was living in the US at the start of 2000s.
Okay.
Correct? Yeah.
I just wondered, do you remember? I remember them coming. I'm not going to tell you when it was. It was 2009.
Was it 2002 or was it?
No, it was 2009 because it was. As I say, I had a broken. Ruth, do you think the response to relics today in Ireland will be different to 15 years ago or 50 years ago?
Well, obviously it will, you know. I mean, you know, but for older people, it may be. I mean, I personally, you know, and this is no way reflection on what is happening, I wouldn't have a huge desire to see it, a relic. But it does matter to people, and these things should not be ridiculed. You know, I feel that people should be respected as much for their belief as their non-belief, and that we all should live in harmony with that notion. So for those that go to, I know it's coming to Tralee, you know, but you know, it is moving to see people going in to see something like that. So honour it and don't be ridiculing people for their belief. Okay. That's all I really wanted to say, Joe.
Well said, yeah. Thank you, Ruth. Barry Matthews and Monaghan. Barry, your point, please.
Well, Joe, how are you?
Will you go and see the relic of St. Bernadette?
I would go and see the relic of St. Bernadette if it was if it comes close to this area here.
It will be, I can tell you. Where are you now?
I am in Castle Blaney at the moment here.
Oh, yeah, well, I'll give you the... go ahead. So you have an especial interest in the relics, have you?
Yes, I would get extra things blessed with the relic, like a pack of cloths or something, and then I'd give them out to people, and then I'd bless.
And have you any relics?
I have clothes blessed by Carlo Acutis' relic.
Okay.
So I have.
And what do you do with it?
Well, I bless different people with them. I'd carry one in my backpack and then I'd bless people with them if they were.
Okay. And what is the relic again? Carlo
Acutis' relic.
And tell me about that saint.
He passed away from leukemia. He was only 15 when he passed away.
Oh, this is the new saint of the internet, they're calling him.
Yes, he passed away. So
he's a child, okay.
Yes, I got blessed with his relic, and then I got extra things blessed with it. And then I'd give different ones to people here in Castle Blaney if they were sick or things like that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, the relic of St. Bernadette would be in St. Mary's Church in Blaney on the 9th of next month. The 9th of next
That's
month.
Great.
Okay, yes. And the Carlo you're talking about is Carlo Acutis, an Italian teenager, used the internet to spread his faith on a path to becoming the Catholic Church's first millennial saint. He died in 2006 of leukemia, age 15, and has already been dubbed a patron saint. Have you seen his remains or seen his shrine?
I haven't seen his remains, but we got blessed with his relic in Benbow Priory back there a number of months ago. So we did. And I got stuff blessed with his relic. When you get something blessed with the relic, you have a second-class relic, if you understand me.
Okay. And do people in Monaghan, Barry, know that you have this second-class relic of St. Carlo Acutis?
Well, I give a lot of people in Castle Blaney prayers of Carlo Acutis.
Okay.
So I have. A lot of prayers and a lot
And how did you begin your veneration of him? How did you discover him?
Well, I heard tell of him. I looked him up online.
Okay.
Somebody told me about him and I heard tell of him.
Yeah, well, that's appropriate that you looked him up online because he is now been called the patron saint of the internet. Okay, Barry, good to meet him. All good. It's good. The relic is coming your way. Deirdre Corish, I mentioned 1947, the first chartered flight. That showed you how popular it was from Ireland to Lourdes. Probably the first chartered flight ever from Ireland, so to speak, where people hired a plane. They had such demand. Deirdre, you go back even further.
Yeah, I have a family, and I'm not sure whether it's from my mother's or father's family, but I have a medal from 1913 for the souvenir of the Irish pilgrimage to Lourdes, 1913, with St. Bernadette and the Blessed Virgin, and on the reverse is a harp and a shamrock. And just from what I had read about it, it was the lockout or...
Yeah, 1913 was the lockout. Yeah, Jim Larkin.
Yeah. Well, there was 363 people from Dublin went on that pilgrimage. And I'm originally from Inchcore, and the grotto in the Obelisk is well known to me and well loved.
And Joe, if I could just say, in fact, for that lady, in fact, the first pilgrimage was 1883 from Inchicore, 1883. And in fact, in 1933, the Oblates chartered a ship in 1933 to bring 1,300 people to Lourdes.
God.
So, I mean, 1883, a group of 12 people left Inchicore. Can you imagine in those days what it took to get there?
It's incredible.
So, it goes back a long time. And that's where that grow in the Irish people from Lourdes, and why I think once the Lerlics are here in Ireland, I mean, it'll be an opportunity for so many people who never were able to make that journey to actually go to a cathedral or a church in their area and visit the relics. I mean, it truly is a once in a lifetime. And in fact,
and Jared, wherever something you lined up, but someone who mentioned there, Ruth mentioned, is there books or any souvenirs of St. Bernadette for sale on the trip?
No, but then you see, as I think I said earlier, St. Bernard never wants to be at her. So even when you go to Lourdes, you'll find some small medals and that to do with St. Bernadette. But everything you see in Lourdes, the grotto, etc., it is all about Our Lady. And in fact, the fact that when St. Bernadette left, and even in recent years, there was talks in, they should bring her body back and her body should be in Lourdes. But Bernadette said that she didn't want to distract from what was Lourdes all about, and it was not about her. She was simply, if you like, the messenger in the process. Mm-hmm. So, no, there won't be...
official.
No medals, actually, you know. No,
remember, when St. Therese came, Ireland, the relics came, Ireland being Ireland, people did set up stalls outside.
Oh, sure. Sure. And look, I'm sure and understandably and rightly, I mean, there's, you know, the people selling many of these various holy objects, etc., including relics to the blessed Cutis, I forget his first name.
But Carlo,
absolutely, yeah. That is all part of the same thing, which is they're faith-filled exercises, and there's nothing wrong with them at all.
Okay, should we stay with us? Deirdre, would you go to the... It's on in Dublin. I don't know if you are in Dublin, but in the Dublin diocese.
No, I'm in County Clare.
County Clare.
I doubt it.
It's going to every diocese now. Now, some dioceses have more than one county betimes. I haven't got the itinerary here in front of me, but it is going to Clare, is it?
It's going to Our Lady of Lourdes in the Cathedral in Ennis, and also Our Lady of Lourdes in Silvermines.
Okay.
I love Silvermines.
Okay. And Deirdre, do you still have the medal?
Oh, I have the medal here. I think it's bigger than a €2. It's bigger than that. And maybe a 2 shilling size.
And do you keep it in a special...
It's well worn.
Do you keep it in a special place in the house?
It's just in a drawer.
So you always know where it is.
I don't know which in my family, but my grandfather had a farm in Inchcore, so I imagine it must have been on my father's side.
With the Obelisk, The Obelisk chartered a ship. In what year again?
1933. In 1933. And in fact, we have a woman who comes with us. My other role is as part of the Oblate pilgrimage. We have a lady who comes with us, and her mother, and I think that woman's aunt, were actually on, now her mother's deceased, but were on that ship. But in 1933, because before the advent of flights, it's like us going to Japan today. How on earth did they get there? Mm-hmm. Dublin to La Rochelle, from La Rochelle down on some trains, then being carried. And there was none of the luxuries that we know about nowadays. And yet, all those stories got back to Ireland. And out of all that came across the country. As someone said to me once, if you drive around Ireland, you'll see many, many shrines of Our Lady of Lourdes Grotto. But you'll, even despite the fact we have our own fantastic shrine in Knock, you won't see many shrines around the country on the roadsides. For Lady of Knock, but Lourdes for some reason.
Just got
the hearts of the people of Ireland.
Yeah, sure. Okay, stay with us back after this break. Joe at rt.ie 5151 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
A relic of St. Bernadette is coming to Ireland this coming Thursday. It's arriving in Knock, and for just over a month it will be travelling around every diocese. It will be brought to every single diocese. And Gerard, is there, in terms of the schedule, does it arrive in the church in each diocese at a particular time every day? Is there kind of a routine?
There is, really, but it's 2 months. It's actually September and
okay,
October.
Okay, God, right. Okay, good. Okay,
so what will happen is that in each place, I mean, it depends obviously on where, like in the case of, I live in Westmeath, although I'm associated with the Oblates, but the relics go from the Diocese of Meath, the Cathedral in Mullingar, to the church in Inchicore. Mm-hmm. So in each case, what will be arranged is, if, for example, say in the case of Mullingar, they've got a kind of a departure service, then it would be arranged in that time. So in each cathedral or church where it's happening, there will be a timetable published to say they're arriving at this time, they'll be having these services or celebrations and leaving at some certain time. So there's no one time around the country, but it will
and
be
will each, on general. Will each venue have a procession, a nighttime procession? Or
The expectation is that there'll be the procession. There'll be an anointing of the sick mass, which will be very typical of what happens in Lourdes, and a blessed sacrament procession, and they'll all be advertised. And so it's hard to think that maybe one or two, I don't know, maybe they wouldn't be able to facilitate it for space reasons, but for sure, yeah, for sure.
Okay, Jean McKinley-Lee is in Donabate in Dublin. Jean.
Hi, Joe, how are you?
Good, thanks. You're listening.
I am, yeah. Just to say that my dad and his family would have had great faith in Lourdes religiously going every year with the Dublin Diocesan Pilgrimage happens in September.
Okay.
And it was just a great, it was every year, like for over 40 years he went, and his brother would have gone longer than that, his older brother.
Every year for many years.
Over 40 years, yes.
Okay.
And his brother was older than that, so he was going longer kind of thing.
And he never missed a year. He never missed a year.
No, unless something catastrophic had happened at home. But every year, faithfully, he went every year. But that was that's what he loved to do. And he'd go for the week and pray and just be with on the Dublin Diocesan Pilgrimage.
But as you say in your note here, this year, unfortunately, did he pass away?
He passed away two weeks ago.
Oh, God.
So, he was a great old age. He was 95.
Ah, great.
But he never lost his faith. And, even up to a couple of years ago, he was still going.
And did you ever hear him, Jean, ever hear your dad answer someone who was sceptical? You know, if he said, why do you go to Lourdes every year?
Well, it was his thing to do. I never... Not that I could say that I've heard him say that, but he would have. I mean, by him going every year, he's shown that he really believed in it, and it was his faith was very important to him, and then passed it on to his children,
As it is to as it is to a lot of people. Okay, God rest him, Jean. God rest him.
Indeed.
Okay, good age, 95. Joe at RTE.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry, bringing you great savings on curtains and bedding, available all year in store and online at harrycurry.com.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at RTE.ie, we're talking about the... arrival of a relic of St. Bernadette of Lourdes in Ireland for the first time ever in Ireland this coming Thursday. It's arriving at Knock, and for the next 2 months we'll be travelling to every diocese in the country if you're disposed to veneration, which a lot of people in Ireland are. Colm Fahan. Colm, good afternoon.
Hey, Joe. I have a first-class relic confirmed by the bishop here of St. Bernadette of Lourdes, St. Teresa, and St. Pius X. And they've been in my possession for the last 20, 30 years.
And
I know where they originated, and I've got all the papers, all the Latin papers. That's why I had to go to the bishop to get him to verify that they were first-class relics, and he said yes.
And what do you want to tell me what it is, Colin?
They're only about the size of a coin, Joe, the relics, in a wee cover, a wee bit of glass.
Okay.
And I presume it's part of St. Bernadette or clothing, what I don't know.
Okay, and where did you attain it?
My brother was a priest in California.
Okay.
God rest his soul. And he sent these relics to my mother back in the late 50s.
Okay.
And when my mother died, God rest her soul, shortly before she died, I'm in Donegal. She lived in Dublin. And she sent them all to me, and they're now in my possession, I presume, for me to pass on when I die.
Okay. And on what occasion would you allow people to venerate them, Colm?
I would bring them to the hospital.
Okay.
I go to Mass up in the hospital here in Letterkenny, and the priest would bless the audience and would bless patients with them on their feast day.
On a feast day, of course, yeah.
Because I have three of them, Joe.
Okay, you have three of them.
I've sent Bernadette, I have sent Teresa, and I have sent Pius X.
And are they, I know Bernadette is a first-class relic. Is it?
They're all first-class relics.
They're all, okay.
All confirmed by Bishop Boyce here in Letterkenny.
Okay. And will you go and see the relic of St. Bernadette she's due in a few days?
Oh, I will. Oh, please, God, whenever she comes. Because I presume she'll be coming to the cathedral in Letterkenny, because that's where the bishop is for the diocese.
Yeah, okay. Well, the itinerary is up there on the website, and I'm sure we'll report on it more. Okay, Colm Gurumil Maka, God bless us. Colm Fahan Joe at RT.ie continues 24/7. Jamie Dial and Sound, Richie Burns, researcher, producer, Ned Egan. Anna Geary is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Their new autumn range will leave you bursting with ideas. View in-store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.